Hello and welcome to the GFW Radio Podcast. This is the podcast for November 29th, 2006. This is Jeff Green, the editor-in-chief of Games for Windows Magazine, and I'm here with a slightly reduced editorial staff. We're missing one member. We'll see if you smart readers can guess who it is. So who is here?
Ryan Scott.
Darren Gladstone.
And Sean Malloy.
Oh. So you figured out. Oh.
We have an empty seat for Elijah.
Yeah. Yeah, for internet superstar Sean Elliott is out today because he's trying to arrange for a trip. So he apologizes in advance for not being here. And we're once again on a shortened schedule, and we won't blame those bastards at Restronauts this time, even though we might as well. Yeah, let's just blame them.
Yeah, let's blame them.
Hey, always
okay,
their fault.
Bastards. Nah, it's not their fault. We actually have two special guests coming up in the second half of this podcast. Ray and Greg from BioWare, the CEOs of BioWare, makers of Baldur's Gate 2, Jade Empire, KOTOR, what else have they made? Neverwinter Nights, and the upcoming Dragon Age, the cover story for our first issue of Games for Windows Mag. So they'll be joining us in about 25 minutes or so, 20 minutes.
Something like that.
So hang on for that. If you don't like us and you like Ray and Greg, wait for them.
Or skip ahead.
Fast forward 20 minutes. Yeah.
And if we sound funny, it's because we had to quickly move all the podcasting equipment into someone's corner office.
So. Yeah, we're actually sitting in the office of some dude for it's the PC Magazine editor-in-chief, right?
I think so.
Isn't that his new title?
Yep.
And I gotta say, he doesn't have that impressive of an office for being the for being the head of like a flagship Ziff Davis magazine. I mean, no offense to the guy, but really,
I think he works out of a virtual reality helmet.
I think he's got some secret, like, second office somewhere that's got, like, the girls feeding him grapes and the spa or whatever, because this thing is kind of a dump. anyway, so we're here. I'm back. I'm completely exhausted because I just spent 2 days in Boston seeing Iron Lore, the makers of Titan Quest. And so I'm, like, jet-lagged and exhausted. So I'm going to stop talking in 1 second. One. But I was really excited to see that expansion. Actually, I have to say, and I'm not just saying that because I'm kissing their ass, though maybe I am a little, but because I thought that game was kind of underappreciated. What did we give it? Do you remember? Oh, was that during our scoreless era?
I don't think we gave it an editor's choice.
We didn't?
No.
It fell just shy, I think.
Did it? Yeah. I was thinking as I was playing through it again this weekend in preparation for this trip, that is probably the first Diablo clone, quote unquote, that actually probably was worthy of not being called that. You know, it seemed to me like good on its own right. Every other one sort of paled lived in the shadow of Diablo.
Mm-hmm. But do you think the reason why that is because it's been like so long since Diablo 2 came out?
Well, I think that's part of it, but I think that they also like sort of got that magic gameplay formula right, where like everybody always tries to get that, you know, carrot and stick loot monster level up thing, and they never quite get what Diablo got. But these guys did it, and they did it because they made the loot mechanism interesting, for one thing. They made the loot, like, the only loot that drops is loot that like these monsters would actually wear, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there was that thing. And then they had all these interesting charm. Did you guys play this game?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Played a bunch of it.
All the charm stuff, the way you could enhance your armor. There was just different. They found different ways to make this basic mechanic cool, I thought.
I think my favorite power-up as a defender was being able to turn into a titan. Or whatever it was. Like, it was a special ability you unlock later on where you can, like.
Really? I didn't get that far.
It's one of the uber skills.
Huh.
You can, like, grow to, like, basically like, dwarf the screen and just kind of, like,
really?
Crush anyone.
That sounds more like Final Fantasy or something.
Kinda.
So that's what I've been playing, and that's what I've been doing.
Right.
How about you guys?
I've been playing EVE Online,
and you actually were playing it.
Yeah, actually.
Yeah.
Are we going to not make that joke?
Yeah,
this week?
Yeah. And I'm still playing it right now.
No, but you actually, you know. Well, you were all despondent because you couldn't get a Wii, so you just...
I was, yeah. I actually almost took the money that I was going to spend on a Wii and bought a new processor with it.
Oh.
But I didn't.
Did you get all frustrated?
I came real close to just going down and...
But you didn't.
I didn't.
You didn't buy the new processor. You're still holding out for the Wii.
Yeah.
Bastard.
Dare to dream.
I work on a console magazine or something.
Maybe I will.
Ooh, no. Show
no,
us.
No, don't. Don't. Okay. So why the EVE Online still? Why?
It's cool. It's not your stupid WoW.
Well. Angry man.
I got nothing.
I know.
To say.
Everybody likes the WoW games. They like the, you know, the loot, healing the monsters, all that stuff that you kind of just talked about with Titan Quest.
I do like that.
I don't like
kind
those.
Of one of your basic game mechanics. Like,
is there no loot or killing
time?
Monsters in Guild Wars?
The Pavlovian bell ringing doesn't work for Ryan. He's above
you,
that.
You can. I mean, there's, you know, space pirates.
You can loot if you must.
But there's, you know, there's other ways to get from point A to point B. You know.
Well, what do you do then?
What were you doing?
There's like, well, the thing that I've been doing is I've been working like the economy.
Oh,
there's like this whole huge complicated sort of market in EVE.
Answer the question. If I went over to your if I went over to your house, say, hey, dude, I'm playing EVE Online right now, and I came over, what would I see you doing? What's going on your screen?
I go over here and I buy things for a really cheap price, and then I go over here and sell them for a really high price.
You know, this is called the stock market. Where you can actually make real money doing that exact same thing.
You could go to eBay. How is that like a game?
But
I don't know.
I'm not risking anything
trading games
real.
Before.
Real.
I guess. I mean, but well, you could do that in WoW too, right? I mean, you could play auction house or whatever. But like, so is that what you're doing basically? Is this like an auction house mechanism, or is that the game?
Like, are you doing the space combat stuff? Or
I haven't really gotten into the space combat outside of like fighting some NPCs. I tried a little bit of it, but it was.
Isn't that like mostly what people do, or no?
Some people do. Some people don't ever touch that stuff, though. There's like you can do the market thing. You can go and mine, which is.
Mine what?
Your basic boring trade skill sort of thing.
Mine
ore. Mine ore.
You
can
shoot a laser at him at least? Like a green laser? It looks really cool.
There's lasers.
Oh, cool.
I just can't wait to play this. You make it such a great game.
Well, like, it's a lot slower than a game like WoW is. You know, you have to, there's more of a learning curve to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I prefer my game slow and boring.
Hey, it's a good game. It's a good game once you get into it.
What is it about? I don't mean to press. No, I do mean to press you on this. what is it about this one that is getting you to keep coming back over all the other MMOs right now?
The comparative amount of freedom.
Do you liken it to Ultima Online?
Yeah, that's exactly.
Really?
Like,
okay.
Like, you know, with a game like WoW. Or EverQuest or whatever. Mm-hmm. When you go into the game, you're like, okay, I want to find something to do.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to go talk to one of these dudes with the exclamation points on his head, and mm-hmm. I'm going to go do a quest.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's, or I'm going to go fish. Like that's what there is to do.
Fishing's fun.
But I mean, you know, like the,
click
the,
on something.
The
if you fish where the little swirly things are, you get special things.
Right,
magic fish.
Like the objectives are all built in for you.
Yeah.
Right, they're basically telling you here's where you need to go and here's what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
EVE, with a game like EVE or Ultima Online, mm-hmm. well, Ultima Online, how it was,
mm-hmm.
you can, you know, you log in and you kind of make your own fun.
Yeah, it's
you know,
yeah, I see what you get.
More sandboxy,
right?
Yeah,
right. I mean, WoW is essentially like a really nice amusement park,
right?
Where everything is all set up for you.
But I like that.
Like, I do too.
I get kind of. Opportunity paralysis. Like if I don't have a goal, I kind of stand there and going,
right.
I guess I'll log out. I don't know what to do. There's too much to do, so I'm leaving.
Right. That was always, to me, that was the barrier I couldn't get over with the very first MMOs that came out is like you'd log in and you'd just be like, well, what the hell do I do now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I do have to say that when I went back to EverQuest 1, when I was writing that story on it for the last issue, I went back in and I created a level 1 character and, because I wanted to go through the newbie experience again. And they've now retrofitted the whole newbie experience in EQ1 in light of WoW. So now they walk you through this whole quest thing, you know, for basically like for the first 6 levels, there's always people giving you stuff to do and whatever. And I was weirdly, it's totally hypocritical, but I was mm-hmm. weirdly like disappointed that they did that. Like, I don't know why, just because...
They're trying to be like WoW.
Sort of. Yeah. Like
right, EverQuest wasn't WoW, so it, that was.
Yeah.
I know what you mean because I did the same thing when I used to play EverQuest. I would go in and part of the excitement was not exactly knowing what I'd be walking into or if I'd be dying in 2 seconds if I walked into that cave over there.
Exactly.
Whereas yeah. WoW, you just know, you're just like, okay, that's not where I'm supposed to be right now.
Right. Yeah, we talked about that a little bit on the podcast that we have with Jeff Butler from Sigil. The part of the appeal of EQ and Ultima Online and all those games back in the day was that there really was a sense of danger and of the unknown.
That's what I like.
Yeah, I can see that.
Have you been PK'd in EVE yet?
I haven't yet.
No,
well, that's because you're traveling in the safe zones, right?
You can't be PK'd in the auction house, can you?
Well, the way it works...
in the bank.
There's different solar, get robbed. There's different solar systems, and each has a security rating. And the higher it is, the more NPC protection that you have. So, and there's areas of just, wild space.
Is it all PK? I mean, is it all, PvP?
It, outside of those secure zones, you can be attacked.
Uh-huh.
You're kind of at the mercy of whoever's
okay. Can
around.
You get your shit stolen too?
Oh yeah, players? Yeah.
Okay. So there's probably people who just play as pirates.
They can kill you and take your stuff. And yeah, there are people who just do that.
And you don't get it back, right? You just shit out of luck. Sorry.
Well, you can
said the S word.
You can buy insurance contracts on your ships.
Huh.
So there's a lot of ways that you can customize them though, and you lose all that if you lose your ship, but you can.
I wonder, it seems like this kind of game's always going to just be for hardcore dudes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, is that sort of an obvious point?
Yeah.
Well, I think if they have, different, the way Ryan's describing it, there's, a safe zone where you can kind of, that's a safe little sandbox. You can do whatever you want to please.
Right.
And then once you step into that larger world, then it becomes, the uber hardcore, way.
But don't you think, I mean, who's going to play it that isn't going to want to ever, what?
The thing is, if you just want to stick to those, civilized, secure areas of space. And you want that to be your entire experience long term, you can do that.
But is there a fun enough game to do that?
Yeah.
Would it be like playing Taipan back in the day or some old school just trading sim kind of games?
If you want to play it that way, then if that continues to be fun for you for months on end, I don't see how that wouldn't be viable.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Yeah. Okay. But the whole game world, the center of it is all secure.
Right.
And then as you go further out, I just saw a map of the game the other night that had, it was a political map where it shows all the outer regions of space are all owned by these specific player alliances who are at war with each other and stuff. And from what I understand, once you get out there into those player policed alliances, it's actually fairly safe for you to kind of live there. As long as you join one of the alliances. And
there's not multiple servers or anything? This is all...
It's all one huge world.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of appealing, too, huh?
It's interesting.
Yeah, that's really nice.
We're talking a lot about EVE Online.
We are talking a lot about EVE Online.
This episode is sponsored
by... In fact, if you took the sum total of all our podcasts, EVE Online probably ranks way up there.
And they actually, yesterday, they just patched in some new expansion material that... gives a better newbie experience, a better tutorial.
All
right.
Don't dumb it down for the newbies.
Well, the thing is, when you create a character in EVE, if you don't know anything about what you're doing, it's very easy, or it used to be very easy to make a lot of choices and not really realize the impact of
that tutorial went on for too damn long.
Yeah.
Let me play your game already. I get it. you couldn't opt out of it, could you? You had to, keep going.
You could skip to the very end, but...
You could.
I mean, you would be sort of lost in a lot of ways if you didn't go through it.
Oh, but I thought that's what it's all about, Ryan. Okay, enough.
All right, enough,
Dan,
enough
what
of
do
the
you
please. Well, two things. One is a demo that came through the office recently, and they left a disc for me to play with. It's called Silverfall. It's an action RPG. It actually looks really cool.
Who made this game?
It's Monte Cristo Games out of, I want to say France.
Oh boy!
Hey, you know what? Actually, it's got an interesting style to it. It actually looks pretty
interesting style. Yeah, this game has a nice personality.
Well, no, I mean, as far as the world itself seems kind of interesting.
Are there elves?
Of course, and there are orcs. It's an action RPG. I mean, but the thing is, it doesn't. It has more of an art. I don't want to say World of Warcraft kind of art style to it, but it definitely doesn't feel like something that you see all the time.
Are they French orcs?
Yes, they wear beret, jaunty berets just off to the side.
And they carry baguettes instead of swords.
I will hit you now. No, but
so do you fight things?
You
and
fight
get
things
loot?
And do stuff. Yes,
that sounds like a very unique gaming experience.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, what I appreciate about it is when you're developing, as the game progresses, you can choose between nature or technology as your character evolves, and that a whole bunch of other abilities kind of revolve around that. So it's like you can go the spellcasting route or you can go steampunk inside of the same game.
So it's like Arcanum.
Exactly. There's like flavors of Arcanum in there, but it's it's worth trying out. I mean, it's just I've always been a huge fan of action RPGs, and it kind of felt like after Diablo 2, everyone just kind of aped that for a while and then just kind of said, okay, we're done. We can't do it any better.
Except Titan Quest.
And then Titan Quest comes along. And I think that, and I guess to a degree, I mean, Hellgate's going to, you know, try to bring that back too.
Right. Is there any love for Dungeon Siege in this group here, in this room?
I really tried. Actually, you know what?
I barely played it. I
tried.
Get into it.
I really tried. The PSP version is actually pretty good. But then, where's the PC version? Actually, you know, it's kind of funny. There's actually... Between the PC version of Dungeon Siege 2 and the PSP version, they have this little thing like you trade a code back and forth and unlock stuff in both games.
That's kind of neat, I guess.
Eh.
I don't know what it was about Dungeon Siege. There was just kind of like no soul in that game. I think that was my problem. It was like a gigantic tech demo.
Yeah.
It felt really generic right from the beginning.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that was like the first game that had the streaming levels, so you never had a load time right when you went from one... Like outdoor area to a dungeon. Mm-hmm. I think so. Wasn't it the first?
It was one of.
Am I wrong?
Really? No, I do remember because like that was
like their big show off thing when it was
like skeletons would follow you outside of a dungeon and keep chasing you. Yeah. That kind of stuff.
But yeah. Other than that, I just remember so many things about it just being utterly dull.
Mm-hmm.
And like all the NPCs that were with you, it's like you could basically like not play that game. It was like another EVE Online. Your party would just like, sorry.
Don't be hating.
No, you know, it really was kind of lame, and I guess because it just felt like it was on autopilot the whole time. Like your AI, and it just there was no personality to your characters, and
yeah,
that was kind of a big problem.
Don't need to randomly bag on dungeons.
What else can we bag?
I know.
Okay, so
what else didn't I like
everything
from the past?
Well, okay, let me see. Also, I was doing a lot of like hardware installation this weekend. I was playing with Windows Vista because we have the Gold Masters, and we got a couple Gold Masters in the office.
Yay.
Woo!
I love Windows. Have I said that yet this podcast? And games for Windows.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's good to repeat every now and then.
Yeah, you know, it was exactly.
Every once in a while, just to make sure we still have jobs. Let's just throw that into the podcast.
Well,
God, what a great platform it is.
Let me dump on it now. No, I'm just... No, actually, It's nice. It works. I mean,
it's nice.
It's super.
That's our first review of this.
Nice. It's got nice, in the box.
It's got a great personality.
Yeah.
No, I honestly, I think that the people who are going to benefit most from it are going to be people who aren't us. People who like reaching out to new people who don't play games or have always been curious about it but intimidated by the, mm-hmm. oh my God, what about system specs? Will this computer
mm-hmm.
work for it?
Mm-hmm.
But as far as my initial test so far, I mean, like, it was easy. After a minor stumbling block with hardware issues,
mm-hmm.
works.
But is this the full-on Vista,
full-on
DirectX
Vista.
10?
Well, I mean, like, it's all in there, but the thing is, like, you know, there's nothing taking advantage of DX10
right.
except for maybe Purple Place and Chest Titans or whatever.
Chest Titans?
No.
Chest.
Oh, Chest Titan. I'm sorry. That's a different
very different
game. I'm thinking of
something
else.
Like,
yeah.
I have that on my favorites bookmark. So.
I saw that on Cinemax last night.
But, you know, I mean, my initial tests are, you know, it's nice. They are throwing in, like, they're trying to throw in more compatibility options for DOS games, but I still can't get Crusader to play, so that's, that kind of sucks.
Yeah, boy, that's like the holy grail, right?
Yeah, like, that for me is like trying to climb Mount Everest. I can't.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Crusader No Remorse?
Crusader No Remorse. It's like the classic game that will not play.
It absolutely refuses to work.
Yeah.
It's like Crusader. You mean that one?
Yeah.
Wow, yeah.
Weird.
The closest I'll ever get to playing that on my computer, I just copied all the files onto the hard drive, and that's
yeah, I don't think it's ever played under any version of... It never played on XP. It never played on Windows 95.
What's it doing?
Oh, wait. Or was it a Win 95 game?
No, it was a DOS game.
It was a DOS game.
Yeah. And the thing is, I tried rolling it back into play into Win 95 compatibility mode and still nothing.
And it still doesn't. Yeah.
That's never, that never works.
No. Well, the thing is, they were trying. I mean, I was hoping that they would have done like more with it. Because they went to the trouble of throwing in this whole extra tab in the properties menu when you like want to load up a DOS game or something.
Why don't they just don't just why don't they just integrate DOSBox?
That's what I was saying. Why not just like, you know, like DOS it's box done obviously for them. Works. Yeah.
Yeah.
What, they couldn't buy them, so they just. I don't know. It seems
it's
like such
open
a
source. They should just license it.
Okay, so my burning question to you is.
Yes.
Like, let's say that I didn't work here and wasn't probably going to get a copy for free.
Mm-hmm.
Would I want to buy one? Would I want to buy Vista?
Well, I mean, I think the real question is, are you
like
buying
it right now?
Right now.
Like buying a PS3 now, which we all know would have been a completely moronic thing to do. would buying Vista be equally moronic at launch?
At launch? Well, I mean, traditionally speaking, a lot of stuff doesn't get fixed until SP1 or 2, but mm-hmm. I haven't run into any major glaring issues.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, like a lot of the stuff is it's going to be more of a benefit to people who just kind of like are kind of peripherally interested in gaming or want to get into it or want to make the process simpler.
And I guess for us, it's going to be the DX10 thing, right?
That's it. And, like, and we don't even we can't even really see that in full effect yet.
Yeah.
So I mean, like if you're looking for some initial holy crap on day one.
Yeah.
I mean, like you're going to see the Arrow interface. It looks kind of neat and frosty, very OS X-ish.
Right.
But other than that, I mean, it's very streamlined. It's nice. Actually, you know, there are a couple cool like minor little things. Mm-hmm. You'll like the Game Explorer interface. It has everything you need to do inside of this one window. It seems kind of silly and, you know, frivolous, but when you load up when you go on the icon for Company of Heroes and it pulls your system, says okay, you have a good CPU, good RAM, good enough hard drive space. Your system rates a 5. Uh-huh. And this game requires this much to run, and then there's a link. There's actually a.
Oh, this is when you first put in the disc for the first time. Or?
Well, no, actually, like after you've installed it.
Oh, okay.
Shouldn't you know this before you've bought the game?
You'd think, but I mean, but theoretically, this could work with demos and like anything else too. So I mean, like after a game you already own, sure. But I mean, and of course they're gonna have to like the problem. I raised this question to the Microsoft guys is imagine like. I have a system that's technically like a 5, like pimping system right now.
Right.
And then 6 months down the road, it'll probably be downgraded to a 4 or a 3. Uh-huh. And they have to like change the compatibility of each game, you know, basically the performance level of each game.
They can just keep adding numbers.
Well, they have to update their database all the time and say, okay, now what once was a game that required a level 5 computer can now work with a level 2 computer.
Okay.
No, but I mean, they could just keep the levels and then every time... something new comes out, they just keep adding
this one's
6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
The obvious 11.
Because it's one higher. But that's actually been one thing. I mean, it's kind of cool, but it's also going to be a little more confusing in the long run. So someone's going to buy a game,
mm-hmm.
and if God forbid it doesn't sell out on the first within the first 6 months,
mm-hmm.
that box is going to say, oh, you need a level 5 system.
Right. I've seen the a couple builds of Vista, and just the aesthetics of it. I mean, just the completely shallow looks factor. It is cool. I mean, it does look nice. And it made me think that's going to be nice. But just in terms of actual practical reality, and do I need this right away?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say it's imperative you go out and race out and buy it.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, the fact is other games are going
to
be...
probably as soon as like Crysis comes out and some other DX10.
I think once you see the applications that really take advantage of it.
Yeah.
I mean, when I see like, you know, Live Anywhere start being populated inside of the OS, that's going to be really cool.
Uh-huh.
I'm already tinkering out with gadgets, kind of like little clocks that you can put on the desktop.
Widgets.
And stuff like that. Widgets, exactly.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, they have that. Sorry, I'm not a Mac guy. but yeah, basically, like widgets. And then they already have ones for, like, people have created their own, like, Xbox Live ones. So you can have your gamer tag on the front page. And you kind of see the next step.
Yep.
Is the default window look still that bubbly crap?
Bubbly crap, as that in
bubbly crap.
Can you
like the default? You know the default appearance of how like the start menu looks and all the window, the title bars and stuff. It is still all bubbly and rounded, and or is it?
What do you care?
Like candy?
Don't you just put like pictures of ponies up anyway as your
backup? Don't you have like a don't you have like a rainbow bright picture in on your interface?
Sorry, that's me.
I'm just wondering. I hate that.
Okay, you'll be hating it then. Yes,
oh. Ryan hates the backdrop effervescent. Image.
There's news for you. Ryan hates something.
Hey, Mr. Malloy. Before we run out of time, do you have something to contribute to?
I'm going back to the Burning Crusade beta.
You are?
Yeah.
Okay.
Where'd you go?
I took a couple of weeks off.
Oh.
I was distracted by console stuff.
He was in console land.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Before the Wii came out, Viva Pinata, and then after that, Zelda. So I'm still playing Zelda, but I don't want to talk too much about that.
Medieval 2. I totally forgot. You guys have been playing Medieval 2 at all?
I have a while ago, but I haven't been in the last couple of weeks. You been into it?
Love it.
Yeah.
Oh, love it, love it. That's awesome.
Yeah. This is right now, we're in a really nice period for PC strategy games. We got Medieval. We've got, well, a lot of us are still playing Company of Heroes.
DEFCON.
Yes.
And it's all different kinds of strategy.
It is. I think we're going to have a tough call at the end of the year for strategy game of the year.
Maybe we should break it out.
We might. In the past years, when there's been a lot, we've broken it out into real-time and turn-based if we need to.
And we were having this conversation earlier. Weren't there like few shooters this year?
There weren't a lot of really good shooters this year.
Yeah,
there weren't
actually,
there weren't any good multiplayer shooters.
Yeah, let me shout out there to you all listener types. To put, yo,
big ups!
We're starting to head into the end of the year. We're going to be doing our Game of the Year stuff in the March issue, which comes out in February. So if you've got your thoughts on Game of the Year stuff, post them on the boards.
Well, actually, we'll start a thread.
We'll start a thread, and you can chime in. Yeah, don't start your own thread.
God forbid.
We'll delete it.
That's just chaos.
Yeah. I'm getting the wrap-up sign. Are we already?
Yeah,
we're ready.
Okay.
It's about time. Okay, so we are going to take a break and come back with Ray and Greg from BioWare.
Oh, hello. I didn't see you there. But as long as you're here, let me tell you about EGM Live, the weekly podcast from the editors of Electronic Gaming Monthly, along with the wonderful sounds of... EGM Live comes action-packed with special guests, late-breaking news, fanboy-baiting commentary, behind-the-scenes tales of office tomfoolery, and trivia contests with fantabulous prizes. Download it now at egmlive.oneup.com or subscribe to it through iTunes.
EGM Live is part of the OneUp Radio Network, taped in the Ziff Davis offices in San Francisco. It is not actually live, and contest prizes are not guaranteed to be fantabulous.
And we are back, and joining us via the magic of Skype is three very important persons from BioWare Incorporated. They have called in to us from Edmonton, Canada, and we're very happy to have them here. We have with us Greg Zeschuk, the president of BioWare, Ray Muzyka, the CEO of BioWare, and Scott Gregg, the project director of Dragon Age, their next PC game, which was also the cover story for our first issue of Games for Windows. So, hello, gentlemen.
Welcome.
Hey there.
Yeah, thanks.
Hey. I have one important question for you first. This is for Ray and Greg. What's the difference between a president and a CEO? Why is one and one the other?
Ooh, very interesting question.
Does a CEO make more than the president?
No. Fortunately, no. We're both peers, actually, at the corporate VP level at our parent company, BioWare Pandemic. But we kind of actually focus on a lot of the same things here and a lot of different things, too, at the same time. So my role is kind of more across all the different areas, like projects and operations and, you know, sort of development, but at more of a strategic level.
Uh-huh.
And then me, Greg, as the president, I tend to go a little more deep on primarily projects, but again, sort of sharing a lot of sort of project vision and strategy stuff with Ray, but, you know, kind of helping out guys like Scott on a day-to-day basis is
right.
Kind of a little more nice. So
you guys have been together doing this for forever, but did you ever like fight like, no, I wanted to be CEO, no, I wanted to be president?
Well, actually, we were joint CEOs, and we changed
like 12 years. And
we almost wanted to reconfigure and shake things up a bit and mix it up, you know.
Uh-huh. So is one of you is like the president, the boss of the CEO, or is it the other way around? I'm sorry, I'm totally I'm wrecking this whole.
No one's the boss of me. I'll tell you that right now. They're except for our boss. We actually have,
and that's one thing too. We have a boss.
Yeah, they're a well-oiled machine.
Yeah, we do have a boss. Yeah, no one's the boss of me except for my boss.
Well, you know, CEO does stand for Chief Executive Officer. That's all I have to say.
I'm sure.
We're peers at the at the corporate level and at BioWare. We've been partners and co-founders here for many years, and you know, we're actually really lucky to have a good partnership where we can work together as peers and kind of jointly make decisions together.
Okay,
and,
well, I was trying to pick a fight between you two, but you weren't taking the bait.
Well, why being a video game company that focuses on a lot of fantasy games, we did have to remove all the swords from our offices at various times over the years. Uh-huh. There's been a lot of carpet cleaning. I don't want to go into any more detail on that either.
Ew. So why don't we talk about Dragon Age? That's why we're all here.
Dragon Age is BioWare's next fantasy role-playing game. It's going to be a little different from what we've done in the past. We're really been pushing for trying to make it more of a dark heroic fantasy setting. So this is a new fantasy role that we've created. And we've taken all the elements from what we call high fantasy, where you got wizards and dragons, obviously, quests, all the things that you expect from like the high fantasy, and we're putting in elements from dark fantasy too. So it's going to be a much more sophisticated, a more more mature approach to it. I think one of the if you want to compare it to what we've done in the past, it's actually a bit more targeted towards a more grown-up audience on it. Mm-hmm. So one of the key things we're putting together is we're trying to grab that tactical party-based experience that we had from our previous games like Baldur's Gate and even Neverwinter's Night and pull them into like a next-generation experience that you actually play on the PC.
Mm-hmm. So when you're saying darker, more than one person while we were visiting brought up like George R.R. Martin books. Is that the kind of influences you're talking about?
Well, there's been a lot of influences from the team. We've actually been working on this for quite some time. Even when we were working on our D&D games, there was a lot of ideas that you had that you just couldn't, do in someone else's IP.
Right.
And pulling a whole bunch of these things, we've been looking where we think the fantasy audience wants to go. And now that we're building our own IP or our own fantasy world, we're out. Be able to actually do all the cool things we wanted to do for years and years.
Yeah, and I mean, another way of placing it too is typically, BioWare games, I think we like to hope, but we think it's probably true, is enjoyed by quite a sophisticated audience. And so, the sort of gravity of the decisions and the storylines are something we really want to push in a game that, like Dragon Age. I mean, it's really, people that are, can handle the heavy decisions you have to make and enjoy that kind of thing is really what we're driving at. We're trying to create a story experience that, I guess when you make, mention George R.R. Martin, yeah, I mean, there's shocking things that happen, and we're going to do the similar thing in the game.
Our fans are smart, they're discriminating, and they're the kind of fans that really respond well to having meaningful choices in the games, which hopefully convey a lot of emotion, and the stories have impact. That's what we're really striving for with Dragon Age. It's sort of the pinnacle of everything we've done to date. We're taking a lot of the folks that have worked on past games of BioWare, Baldur's Gate, Neverwinter Nights, and Knights of the Old Republic, and Jade Empire, and all the good stuff we've done over the years, and we're just taking all that knowledge and trying to build something that's going to be pretty compelling, really emotionally compelling at a deep, deep level.
In all those games that you've worked on that you mentioned, there definitely were moments that you can point to in every game where you had to make some pretty tough moral decisions, and the consequences would often be fairly brutal. And so you have been able to do that even within the context of somebody else's IP, like a D&D or a Star Wars. So what do you think you're able to do in an with your original IP that might be... Like, is there a specific example you could give listeners as to what kind of extra freedom you might have now?
Well, we've had the honor of actually working with some of the greatest licenses and IPs in the world, and it's been great working with that. But in the end, you have to respect the license owners on it, because they're the ones that have set up in the world. So there's certain things that you just can't do. Now, I don't want to give away any of the real story points on it, because that's kind of the bread and butter on the things. But one of the things we've been striving for is to try to make sure that whatever consequences happen, they make logical sense, so the player is aware of what their choices are going to be. These ones make the decision itself to be very emotional and very difficult for them to do.
Mm-hmm. Another way to slice it too is, there's been times where we wanted to involve characters or locations, and hey, kill people off, destroy things. I mean, and we had effectively we had to answer somewhat to someone to do that. Now it's really ourselves,
right.
Because we want to, like, you know, bring up a key character, build it over time, and then knock it down at a later date in some gruesome fashion.
Right.
I mean, it's our choice, and I think that freedom. I mean, you know, we find that freedom to be really, really freeing. You know,
right.
I mean, in terms of the openness of what we can create is kind of one more notch. You know, we
right.
can kind of dial one more notch upward, which is really cool.
Right. I guess with D&D, for example, like you couldn't fundamentally change something in the Forgotten Realms world, right? I mean, you'd have to get their approval mm-hmm. to destroy an entire city, say. Even just for the sake of your own particular fiction, right?
In Star Wars, it's not like, you know, George Lucas probably doesn't want certain planets blown up.
right.
Not going to blow up the Wookiee homeworld and KOTOR.
Chewbacca wouldn't be very pleased with that, obviously.
Right. But would that be a problem? And I'm not asking these things as a way to diss those IPs at all. I'm just curious. If you had...
It was an honor, like Scott said, to work on those. It was an honor, and it was a great experience, and we had great, great respect for you know, Atari and LucasArts, respectively for D&D and Star Wars. I mean, we have great reverence for those. And
right, in the first Knights of the Old Republic, you had actually wanted to have a player choice eventually lead to the Wookiee planet blowing up. Like, I mean, is that the kind of thing that, like, that Lucas may conceivably have said, even just within the fiction of your game, you're not allowed to do that?
Well, that's a tough question. I mean, obviously every situation is different. The nice thing about a game like Dragon Age is, you know, now the decision is basically up to us,
right,
to decide what's the impact to the world, to the fiction, going to be, and how is it going to impact the player.
Right.
You know, one
right.
of the things fans always want is consistency between the things. When we're doing Knights of the Old Republic, we want to make sure that the fans, you know, who are exposed to the modern era stuff, they can see the links on it, and there wasn't any inconsistency. This is one of the design philosophies we can take from Dragon Age, is that things in the world make sense. You know, you just don't walk around the corner and there's, you know, some monsters, you know, why are they there? Everything in the Dragon Age world has a purpose for being there. It makes logical sense. And all these things all pull together to really make a more immersive experience for the
right.
player.
What are you guys going to do? It seems like the freedom is a cool thing about the IP, but on the other hand, the challenge is going to be getting people to be compelled to want to invest in that game in your fantasy world. And what kind of steps are you guys taking to ensure that that's going to happen? Like, how much are you building the world out in your own head? Are you going to release stuff ahead of the game to get people interested in the world?
One of the neat things is the team has been working for literally years on the backstory of the history of this world. It's incredibly rich, so it feels really well integrated, and it's something we're really proud of. Designers have built something that it feels like it's a living, breathing world. So there's small elements all throughout the game that reflect that and make it feel richer. And, you know, we're talking about sharing some of those elements with our dedicated fans, because they
right.
these are the kind of things that really appeal to the fans when they understand the depth and richness of the fantasy universe. They bring it to life and make it feel like the characters there are real characters, the characters you can come to care about, and that they make the story that much more compelling as a result.
Yeah, I think another factor, too, is, you know, the biggest thing we can do is make an awesome game. Like, at the end of the day, if we make a great game that just is totally compelling with characters you love, I mean, that's why people get invested. And
right.
the other thing that's interesting is, you know, allowing us, sort of, we've been sort of exploring this in, you know, obviously the last few games that BioWare's been working on, just, you know, a game that's derived just purely from, you know, game fiction. It's dedicated to the gaming platform. There's it's not derived from some other source. Actually, you know, it kind of gives you the ability to kind of think about it in a different way. Like, you know, we look at things like downloadable content. You know, obviously we've sold Neverwinter Nights modules. Like, we can think of how to deliver that big story in one chunk and, you know, have little stories after the fact and how it all ties together into a giant arc. Like, we've got so much flexibility in how we put it together because of the medium itself. It's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean you're pursuing that idea right now with Dragon Age, where, like, leave the whole world wide open, you go through the story, and then there'll be, like, additional, like, uploadable content after the fact?
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually a really important part of our community plan. that we really believe in supporting our fans post-release, and we want to do things that will actually allow them to continue exploring new directions. So obviously, you know, we're building a core game, but we are thinking about the franchise. We are thinking about this as a long-term IP that we're going to support at BioWare for years and years to come.
Yeah, the designers have actually built a full world with, you know, history going back 5,000 years, all sorts of different nations and races all interacting together. The actual game of Dragon Age only takes part in one country in the world. And mind you, there's a lot of area for you to explore, a lot of locations, a lot of variety in it, but it's still only like a piece of the entire Dragon Age world itself. And wow. You know, our design team is looking forward to sort of exploring and filling out that over time. I mean, that's our long-term goal.
And I think, you know, also the company, we kind of have a very long-term view when we make stuff. Like, we want to, you know, like, I guess when you look at, like, the entire Baldur's Gate arc as in, at one level, probably one of our crowning achievements in the sense of, you know, we took a pretty massive story, like, from beginning to end, and it was a really compelling experience. And, you know, at the end of it, the conclusion, you felt like, wow, I did something. And I think what's exciting is that now, again, when we're the ones that kind of control the property in the world, we can do that. And we also can do it over and over again. We can create all kinds of different stories and all kinds of ways. We can put them all together into a giant arc. There's all kinds of neat things that we can do.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay. I was just to expand a little on the modules, and obviously, like, you kind of pioneered that area with Neverwinter Nights. And one thing I did appreciate when I was up there seeing what you guys were up to is how detailed and far along the engine is. So that the fact is, like, you spent all this time in the back end working on the engine, and then just basically you throw together the entire game world inside of like a few months now, I guess. I'm kind of wondering. I mean, is that full engine that full tool set going to be available day one, or?
Well, we haven't actually locked down the exact plans on it. We want to have the goal of having the tools out there for the community, because it always surprises what they're able to actually build with the stuff. It's some pretty great content that's actually made by the community. And we just want to make sure that our tools that we're building are powerful and they enable the community to make great stuff as well.
We learned a lot of great lessons on that front with Neverwinter Nights. So you can almost see Neverwinter Nights has been a big test bed for us to really deploy all the knowledge we have on community and user-generated content, post-release content, things like that. An ongoing story that's part of a long-term plan. That those are all things that we've learned during Baldur's Gate, during Neverwinter Nights, in the fantasy setting. And we're going to take all those lessons and apply them on Dragon Age.
Are you going into this thing with the same kind of mentality as Neverwinter Nights, or, you know, because that game seemed to be very much just a way to empower gamers to make their own modules, and here's BioWare's sample module. But it seems like in this case, you're striving more to create your own original experience. But
very much, yeah. Like, we're really striving to build first and foremost an amazing story, an amazing experience for the players, and at the same time we recognize there's real value in community and having the fans having access to really powerful tools, but the first and foremost goal is to make a game that people are going to talk about and say, that is the best fantasy RPG I've ever played.
Mm-hmm.
So what, when you guys first showed this like 2 or 3 years ago now at E3, and it was something completely different, what exactly did you show off that first time?
Well, that was essentially our proof of concept demo that we put together. I mean, normally we don't show those publicly, but we wanted to, you know, reassure the fans that BioWare was committed to actually delivering great experiences on the PC. And we thought it was very important to actually have that out there to let them know that, yeah, we've got something coming down the pipe. It's going to be pretty exciting. And we took a look at that, and we took a look at where the technology was going, and we decided that, you know, to really deliver the experience we want, the, you know, the great, like having a great event, a great, you know, just, what's the word I'm looking for here, Ray?
Event product?
You know, yeah, probably. Just basically it's like, wow, that was game.
Yeah. It's just, trying to make something that has, it's going to be a landmark, hopefully, when it comes out, that people will point to and say, there's moments within that have never been done before. There's moments that are really reminiscent of the things BioWare's done in the past. but they're just, you know, it, the thing is, basically it's a culmination of everything we've been working for. It sounds maybe trite, but it's like, really, this is a goal. We owe this to our fans because, you know, they've actually kept us in business, and we want to deliver a great fantasy experience. We haven't done a fantasy game at BioWare for a little while now, so we think it's high time that we release something that's going to be like a landmark fantasy title for BioWare.
Well, there's some pretty compelling stuff in that original.
Yep.
That thing, like, you know, it actually, it's funny, I mean, in some sense, like, it actually had some really cinematic conversations for the time, like probably the best that we had done. Is that, you know, the way we look at development, we always kind of build upon our past experience, and that was one step along the way of creating these really great, you know, it's like, you know, why will this big game be so compelling? Because, you know, it, we can do all this stuff so much differently and so much better than we have in the past, and that was one of the sort of like a glimpse at, frankly, a very early view of where we were going.
Yeah, and we wanted to make sure that the technology was in place so we could actually deliver that experience. And at the same time, we wanted to make sure that there was enough care given to the actual design of the actual world setting itself. So we had a small team of designers that were actually, you know, working on that all the time, planning out the world, planning out the story, making sure that everything was up to the standards of what we wanted to deliver. It was also a big part of prototype, you know, like testing the technology and just pushing the boundaries of what we could do. You know, can you take part in a giant battle and really feel like you're making a difference in this world? Can you, you know, things that we've been pushing lately are, you know, pretty exciting as well, like giant creature combat and, you know, being able to do choices that actually impact the way the entire story flow of the entire world proceeds. These are things that haven't really been pushed to the edge, really, in a lot of games yet. Mm-hmm. We're really trying to take that to another level.
Mm-hmm. You guys, the way that fans have looked at it, and I think even the way that we have spun it a little in the story was, you know, that you guys are back now to the PC with this game. In your minds, is that how it feels, or do you guys feel more like you never left? Or do you feel that that's a little fair?
No, we never left. We've always been supporting our fans on PC. We always will. They're a really important community to us. And we have Jade Empire PC coming out. We've enhanced the version we did on the Xbox with a bunch of new stuff, a bunch of new content, mm-hmm. customized the graphics, you know, added a bunch of new features in, and changed the AI, made the combats more satisfying, and, you know, it's going to be a little more fun, I think, overall to play that game as a result, and it's going to be a great experience. So we've been supporting the fans throughout. You know, we have another game coming up shortly as well. And it's I think we will always want to support the PC fans because they're so important for our online community. They're, you know, the people that are talking about the games on the forums that kind of build the early awareness and the early adopters, basically, that kind of, you know, propagate the news about games when they're excited about something.
And I think keeping it rest is also, I mean, even though we play console games, we're still pretty hardcore PC players. Like, we've got, you know, we still play a lot of stuff on the PC, so it's still in our blood, and I don't think it'll ever not be, because it's not much beats that experience when you're trying to get certain types of games and game experiences. Like, the PC is unbeatable. Like, it always will be for certain things.
The game comes out on console and PC. I often buy both versions just to try out, you know, see what they're like on both systems. And,
sure.
I kind of gravitate towards the PC quite often, frankly. I mean, I play on both, but... I love PC games.
And there is those games like that. What's it called? That WoW, I think, is it called?
Something like that. Well, I think, you know, on this magazine here, we've talked about it endlessly on the podcast, and many of our listeners would argue too much, that you know, we're all pretty platform agnostic here, you know, and we all have multiple machines and play different kind of games for different reasons.
Yeah, totally agree. You have to, right? I mean, because there's so many great lessons to learn from handheld and PC and online games and the console games. You have to. If you want to be a developer that's progressive and innovating, you have to look for the best of breed on all systems and try and bring those things together. So really, you know, we don't really see the platforms as really distinct. You know, for us, we're trying to take features that are the best game features to make the best experience and apply them wherever we can on both platforms.
So why would like a game like Mass Effect be right for Xbox 360, whereas like Dragon Age is on PC? Why the distinction? Why not put them on both?
There's a variety of factors. Like, I think, you know, it ends up being, there's business factors, there's sort of aesthetic factors. it's almost like there's, you know, each one goes into pretty complex sort of analysis ultimately. At the end of the day, we have to kind of juggle a lot of things to sort of make the decision. And suffice to say, I mean, I think what we want to do is always be, like, you know, it's kind of the reason, I guess, when we say, you know, we started the handheld section of the company. It's like we want to have something that's really impactful on almost every platform, I guess is maybe the way of saying it. It's like, you know, we wanted to create handheld games to sort of say, hey, we're over here. And, you know, Xbox 360 games, say, hey, we're over there. You know, we want to have a broad reach.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because, you know, some companies have definitely sort of made the, you know, you see them dabble a little bit in the consoles, and then if they get lucky and have a hit, they kind of never go back in a way. And it seems like it's possible that in a way you could have done that with this, right? I mean, you had pretty good success with Jade Empire, and Mass Effect is obviously getting lots of love so far. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what I'm asking. It's just that, and I'm not asking for you just to say, like, because we love the PC, but, like, in a way you could have just said, well, we've done that and this market isn't as big, and yet you've chosen not to do that. Is that again?
We have fans of markets, you know. And honestly, we have people that love BioWare games on all different platforms, and I think we want to try and deliver the best story-driven games to all of them. And that's our goal at BioWare, is to try and really, we're striving to deliver the best story-driven games in the world. And there's lots of fans out there, lots of different platforms, and all the games are going to be a little different, and they're going to be customized. They're going to be really, you know, developed with care and attention, and really, you know, really customized for each platform. But we want to support the fans on all the different systems.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you a question just about your general, like, success and state of where you guys are at right now. When you first came to CGW many years ago, you were pitching Shattered Steel, and then even in the Baldur's Gate days. Actually, I don't know if you remember this, but there was one time when Baldur's Gate 1 had come out, and you guys were working on Baldur's Gate 2, and were hitting us up for covers. And at that time, we were still sort of balking, and I remember you being totally frustrated. You were like, "What the hell do we have to do to make it on the cover of CGW? Like, aren't we?" And now, you know, we would basically put whatever you did on the cover without even knowing what it is.
It's like a picture of Ray smoking a cigar.
Right.
Like, we'll put them on the cover.
I remember that meeting. I think that was me and I was talking to you, Jeff, right? You know?
Yeah. I remember the Shattered. I think it was me and Elliot. Was it Elliot Chin on the Shattered?
Yeah.
I was really impressed because you guys had this big monitor. Like, this was back in the day when it was like really big. I came back and they had this giant monitor down there. It was
way bigger than I would assume that our attitude is probably, like, you know, similar to, like, a lot of people's, and it just makes me wonder, like, you have now gone from being, like, total underdogs and unknown people who weren't even in the gaming business to now being really, you know, kind of on top in a way, and I wonder how the pressure is different to you, like, how it feels. Is it harder now? Is it easier now?
You gotta stay humble, and you're only as good as your next game. And in the eyes of your fans, and that's the way we look at it, is we can't let our fans down, not once.
Mm-hmm.
One thing to think is there's been an attitude that really hasn't changed from the beginning, and all the people here, just in the end, they just want to make a really, really, really good game that they've enjoyed playing.
And our fans.
And our fans.
They're going to get value for money.
Yeah, and this hasn't changed from the beginning, and we're our harshest critics. You know, whatever anyone else says about stuff, you know, we're 10 times as hard as anybody else on the stuff that we do. We're always looking for improvements, always way of delivering a better game experience.
Yeah, it's funny, because at one time we were having this sort of, it was almost a casual debrief where this guy walked into the room, and I think three of us and another, Trent and a couple other guys are sitting around just going to town on one of our games and going, you know, and there's this and there's that. And the guy walked in, he's from another game company, and he kind of sat for, like, stunned for like 10 minutes, and he says,
"What, did that game just win Game of the Year?"
"What, you sound like you're like, this is the worst game ever that you guys just made." And it's, you know, yeah, and we're like, yeah,
pretty good, but it could be better. You know?
Yeah, and I think we are.
In
like,
respect, it's always easy to.
Yeah, we're not belittling the work. I mean, I think, you know,
yeah,
the things that we are really extremely hard, but, you know, and we're not perfectionists either. It's just that, you know, I think from our perspective, and that's actually where maybe the you know, we don't feel the pressure because we always have had it on ourselves anyway. Like we don't worry so much about the, you know, I can't say that we don't, like, sort of, you know, wait for every single review and, you know, continually check all the, you know, the Metacritic and game ranking stuff for our products. I mean,
we do.
We hang on that stuff, but at the same time...
Don't get us started on that.
Yeah, please.
We're not big fans ourselves.
Yeah, the way we operate is, you know, it is really it's almost like a peer pressure now. Like, I think we also have multiple projects, and you know, everyone wants everything to do well because it kind of keeps the positive energy flow for the next project down the pipe. So you have a lot of, you know, your peers at the company. There's over 300 people working here now, and there's lots and lots of games we're working on. So
they're all really good people. They're smart, they're passionate, creative, hardworking, and
really crazy about making great games, and they want everyone to succeed. And so, you know, our colleagues here at the company are the ones we want to make sure we don't let down the most. I mean, we want to make sure that they have like that nice record when they release their game. And you know, the last one was successful, this next one will be as well, hopefully.
So success has not spoiled Bioware yet.
You're just waiting.
We have larger monitors than 14 inches now, but not much. Actually, we have pretty good monitors. I think we're like,
and bathroom doors that close. Remember the first office we were in? Bathroom door closed with your foot.
Really? Let's talk about the first office.
the first office I visited up in Edmonton was shockingly low rent.
Yeah.
Maybe that was the one that it could have been. Well, there was this one where, like, you know, it was funny because it was above, like, next to this restaurant, above this, like, you know, secondhand bookstore. And I think when we actually finally looked at the electrical system, we couldn't believe that the 30 computers hadn't, like, completely blown all the circuits.
Four breakers. Like 30 or 50 machines.
Yeah, actually, we started to crack.
Yeah, it started to break down at the end, but
there for less than a year. That hasn't spoiled us. I think we still want to, you know, I think, you know, we still want to do good stuff. Like, we have a lot of, you know, folks that look forward to what we make. You know, we don't want to sort of have them feel that you know, we're letting them down or we're not doing a good thing.
Each game has to be better than the previous one. So it's, you know, you got to learn from the past. Because we have such good people here. I mean, we make our games are pretty good. So we try and make each one better than the last.
They're okay.
When I
was up there to see Baldur's Gate 2 for the first time, at that point in at the size of the company and where you were at, Ray, I'm not sure about Greg if you were doing this too, but Ray, I remember that you were taking home builds every single night to play the game. Your involvement was extremely hands-on. Is it still that way with Dragon Age, or has the company gotten too big for that?
That's the right point of the project, it is. Yeah. Usually when you get down to the critical phase where you're tweaking gameplay, you're tweaking the actual experience, that's when feedback from Ray and Greg is actually most important to it.
Well, also, there in the beginning, like, I think maybe there's sort of two phases that were quite intensive, which is that, and we still do that, we still do play, like, you know, we're still, hey, we're getting builds of Jade PC, frankly, like, I think there's a new one coming tomorrow, the latest and greatest, so we're going to be, you know, playing it and, you know, filing bugs and, like, comment, like reviewing the status of the team. And, you know, that's still, you know, at the end of the day, that's what our passion ultimately is actually playing the games and having a hand in helping them. And so, you know, we help get them started usually for, like, a couple months to kind of, like, start the direction. And, you know, that's the intensest point. The second would be, like, throughout the whole middle, with, you know, we sort of check in and are just sort of more observing and making sure we're on track and the vision's maintained. And then, you know, and frankly, I mean, the teams are so talented and so focused and so good at what they do now, that ends up being, you know, more of a pleasure than anything else. We just sort of see how things unfold. It's really great how dedicated the people are. And finally,
like Christmas every day.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, we want to do a walk around and look at all the cool stuff.
That is cool, because then you get to see all the stuff that's in development that you're not seeing every day, It's very exciting. And then at the end, play the games, take them home, and you know, we really love it, you know, because we're big RPG fans. You know, at the core, you know, why are we doing this? So everybody here loves RPGs. They're all passionate about making the best games in the world. That's what we're striving for. It's on the horizon, you know, that perfect game. We're always striving to reach that point, and we'll get there. You know, we're getting there one step at a time.
Well, it seems you keep striving there by I was just noticing, so we know that you're going to be using the conversation system from Mass Effect in Dragon Age. Are there other elements from previous games that you think are going to be a good fit in Dragon Age? Like, are you going to take the combat system from Jade Empire and modify that? Or what sort of things are you thinking that kind of need to happen to get closer to that perfection?
one of the ways we approach our games isn't probably the way to answer this, but we kind of break down our core features into a few categories. There's ones related to story and character, and you know, things like the facial system, the animation systems, the way the dialogue unfolds, you know, things like that. That's really important to conveying realistic, emotional, kind of emotionally compelling experiences and characters that are credible and believable. Progression systems, customization. You want to have really interesting progression systems, statistics and things like that are accessible on the one hand, really easy to understand, and yet provide a lot of depth and opportunities for you to customize your character and really feel like you're making a meaningful progression through the game, and very satisfying. Conflict and combat, that's a core part of the game. You always have to have a villain, and somebody you can really, really relish hating, you know, someone you really enjoy bringing down and defeating. So you got to have that at some point. There's got to be some tension in the world. And, of course, you got to have exploration. You have to have really interesting worlds to explore, big open landscapes. It's a very popular type of gameplay now, so we're trying to embrace that as well. And each of these has lots of features that are associated with them. And we look to the past to pull together the features that have worked very well. We try and innovate and try and improve those all the time as well. And link all these things together in activity chains, we call them.
You know, one of the things we also do is we take a couple areas on each game and say, okay, these are the areas we're going to put a lot of effort in and try to take it above and beyond anything we've done before. In Mass Effect, they did that with the conversation and some other things on it. With Dragon Age, one of the areas we're really going to be pushing is the party-based combat. So we have lots of things where your characters are interacting with the environment, with the other characters, combination attacks. And we also want to do large creature combat like it's never been done before. We've done large creatures in the past, but if you sat down, it's like, well, if there was a 14-foot-tall, you know, monster in the room, and there was four of us trying to take it down, how would we go about that? And that's kind of where we started. We really want to capture the feel of the cave troll fight from the Lord of the Rings movie.
Right.
That's what we said. It's like, yeah, that's what we wanted. We want to deliver that experience.
Also choice. Like, we're really pushing the envelope for the way the story unfolds at a sort of meta level. If you make choices, you want to see outcomes that are different than other players. That's always really fun to hear. That someone says, you remember that moment when you did this and this happened? And you're like, no, I didn't do that. I did this instead, and then this happened. And then what if you imagine that kind of going out to the whole story view? You know, like, we actually have really meaningful different outcomes of, you know, entire different groups are aligned with you at the end of the game depending on what you've done. And we want to have
the world really changes.
The world changes, like, because the consequences of your action or actions are very apparent.
Well, we dabbled in that, you know, in the past. I think there's been bits and pieces. And in Jade, there was actually, you know, the folks from the PC will see, there's a few pretty neat things that you actually
awesome do. That Jade Empire is
ending. Yeah, spectacular. But also in the middle, there's the Tian's Landing stuff. There's a few things that are, it's kind of like we start, okay, let's take a little further. And that was one step. And then, you know, Mass Effect was another step. And I think Dragon Age will have like two more steps after that. So it's like a neat, it's neat to sort of like, and that's the thing where Scott said is, I think because we've, yeah, the same folks that we've had for a long time. Scott was the lead programmer on Baldur's Gate and Neverwinter Nights, so he's been with us a long time and saw, you know, all those things unfold. And so, you know, we fortunately have a lot of the same folks who work on all these games. When that happens, they kind of say, you know, yeah, we did this time, but let's go a little further. And so that when you've got that kind of organizational memory, you can actually do pretty neat stuff because you're starting at a different level than someone who say, hey, look, we've never made this kind of game before. Let's try and make one. That allows us to kind of do some pretty cool things.
Is it just from a technical standpoint or a gameplay standpoint, is it that hard to do that kind of thing you're talking about where moral decisions will change the world? Because I'm just curious as to why most other folks don't even attempt to do it. Because when it happens in games like yours,
it's like really hard. It's probably one of the hardest things that we can do because it's like making 100 different games in one box.
Yeah,
you know, that's what it really is.
The testing of it is spectacular.
The content is exponentially more complex just to build, integrate, test.
Because you have to create outcomes for every what if, is that it? Or
that's the thing. You want the possibility space for the players you want them to be able to choose what they want to do in combat at a tactical level, and then at a strategic level through the main story arc. And if you really achieve that, you've achieved something that's, I don't think it's been really ever done in a game before. You have choice at every level possible. That's what Dragon Age is about, is being able to really fulfill the fantasy and be the character you want to be and have the party members around you and approach combat the way you want to approach it and then approach the story the way you want to approach it. Really be the hero, the tyrant, or anywhere in between.
Well, I mean, and to maybe put a number on it, I remember, you know, with Jade Empire, we were doing some rough, there were some rough calculations that were put together, but okay, how many permutations of, you know, characters and choices and, you know, sort of there's all these neat things you can do amongst the characters and do things with them, and okay, we'll put it down on paper. This is a rough guess. Okay, there's 130,000 different outcomes. I don't mean like story endings, but like along the way, permutations, different paths and different ways you can do it. Oh, that's a little too many to test. we'll have to figure out a different way to...
You do end up testing, but you use a lot of automation testing.
Yeah.
Our QA group is awesome. They're really specialized in testing RPGs. And our design group, our animators, our artists, programmers, everyone across the board, the organizational knowledge is there because our turnover is so low. We're able to retain these great, great people. Across the board that are passionate, smart, creative, and they know how to make this stuff. And they've done it, you know, half a dozen times before in different products we've made. So,
and this all comes back to what we're trying to deliver to the player is an actual experience with their actually in doing it. You know, we say that we want you to live the game, not watch the game, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'll be really interested in seeing if you guys can pull this off with your MMO, because one of the things that MMOs don't do well, at least now, is making you feel like you're actually having some sort of effect on the world. It always just feels like you're just kind of this really bit player and something's going on. Because you can't change it, because if you do something, then, you know, the other guy can't do it.
Or more important, the story just feels like half-baked.
Can't talk too much about that, but there's certainly some interesting mentions that, yeah, you know, it's kind of funny, because, I mean, when we actually try and put our experiences against making an MMO, it's neat, because we want to sort of go different directions, and again, that's another super team working on some really cool stuff. There's a lot of folks from the sort of Austin scene working. There's also a number of, you know, BioWare imports from Edmonton that have gone down, so it's a great mixture of people, all super talented, and, you know, it's one of those sort of fun things that we do get to do, is we get to go and sort of check out what they're doing, and seeing the various sort of, hey, there's another thing to look at, another prototype to play, and, you know, that's just so much fun. That's always really cool.
So I'm kind of wondering, so the members from the Edmonton team that are down there in Austin right now, besides enjoying the sunnier weather, what did those members work on before going down there?
What did the folks who came from BioWare Edmonton to BioWare Austin work on when they were here in Edmonton?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There's actually folks who worked on pretty much every game we've ever released, I think, and across the board.
Big range.
Yeah. I don't think there's a single, probably not really anything that hasn't been represented. Our creative director down in Austin, James O'Len, was one of our most senior designers, and across the board we got some other great designers down there and a whole range of people that are like really top notch in the industry, really.
Yeah, like James was, you know, lead designer on many of, you know, the Baldur's Gate, co-lead on Baldur's Gate 2, and, you know, lead on Knights of the Republic, and got some good stuff under his belt, and he's got some of his, you know, prized lieutenants there, and unfortunately a lot of the other guys are here, and they sort of filled in the shoes, and, you know, James still has involvement across the whole company, but it's great because, you know, we have such a wealth of people, especially in the, you know, in design and all these other areas that kind of know how to do this stuff, and it's wonderful being able to kind of go off and tackle the challenges with them and have the guys, you know, all still interacting, saying, hey, we're learning this on MMO, maybe we can bring that back to these games we're working on here, and really cool stuff.
It's great because because we have such a low turnover, again, it all comes down to the people, because we have people that are passionate about story and character and the mission statement that we're driving towards, and they've stayed with us for years, so they've worked on a number of products, and they've grown, you know, in the process, and we have amazing people here in Edmonton and Austin, and we're so lucky.
Cool. Well, so, we definitely have like 800 more questions about the MMO, but you probably can't answer any of them yet, right?
Not yet, unfortunately. It's going to be great, though. It's got a great team.
It'll
be really good.
I'm so holding my tongue right now. Should I ask the question?
We'll save that for another interview if you guys aren't ready yet.
Absolutely, yeah.
I have my guesses.
How are you doing on time?
We should be. We've got like a couple minutes left.
Okay, we have a couple minutes left. It sounds.
You haven't asked us the usual "what are you playing" questions and all that.
Oh,
that's
don't
what
worry.
We're going to close with.
Oh yeah, there is that.
We're going to keep you on your toes. We're going to ask you that at the end.
Why don't we do that? What you playing?
Uh huh. What are you playing?
Right now.
Yeah.
I was playing.
Not right now.
While we're talking. Hopefully, you're not playing anything.
Playing solitaire.
Minesweeper.
Yeah,
okay.
The whole time.
Well, actually, right now I'm playing Dragon Age. Oh wait, you guys aren't supposed to know that.
Way to rub it in.
Thanks guys. We got to wait a year.
Gothic 3 for me. Uh-huh. I'm playing Final Fantasy, the latest Final Fantasy incarnation of many. Of course, playing that. Playing Final Fantasy 3 on DS.
Oh, well. I'm playing that too. That's a lot of fun.
Where are you at? I guess it's kind of rife with spoilers. Remember, because a whole bunch of us are playing the Final Fantasy 3 thing. We kind of say, "Do you know anything about the Tower of Owen?" And they go,
"Oh my God, that's right where I'm stuck."
Yeah. Well,
stuck.
We can't talk about this. It'll be spoilers for everyone listening to the audience. Yeah.
They keep telling me I gotta we have to turn into toads, and I don't know how to do it yet. I'm totally stuck in that tower.
If you know how to do it, please.
Yeah, please send your gameplay tips to
BioWare Strategy Hour.
You don't have that yet.
It's great though. I'm loving it.
Yeah. Check all the little towns around that the area. You'll find it. I think someone helped you with that.
Thank you.
is that like a square over there?
I'm really enjoying Gothic 3 right now. I have to say, it's one of the games I'm kind of most immersed in. I just started a few days ago, but we're both big fans of it.
Pretty cool.
Weren't there some problems with the European version, and like most of this has been solved for the North American version?
I don't know. We actually got sent a European version from our friends at Bronobite, so that's the one I'm playing right now.
Yeah, they patched it, and we're all
I got the latest patch.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I like Gothic 2.
Yeah,
Gothic 2 is good. I think Gothic 3 is better, personally.
It is so big, it will blow your mind. Like, just,
cool.
I've been playing it for a while, like Ray, and it's like. You know, I'm like one of those explorer types, so I just like run off in a random direction and see how far I can go until something stomps on me.
I'm more of a completist guy, you know, trying to finish all the quests. I love the fact that you can finish all the quests of one group and then turn another group against that group and you know, basically destroy them and then get extra experience for doing that.
Oh, wow.
You're a completist? I never knew that. Whenever we put in the gameplay logs of like number of hours played, like on the save games, Ray's is always like twice as big as everyone else. I always gotta find the bugs.
Yeah.
Neverwinter 2 is actually really cool too.
It was neat. I got that in the pile. And
it was actually very fun to see. Yeah, for us, one of the thrills is actually working with another group externally when they take our engine tech and they build a new game with it, and then we get to play that game.
Yeah, we haven't really looked at Neverwinter Nights 2 yet. I'm just kidding. That's a little bit of a joke around here. That game.
Yeah.
We'll move on. I liked it. I liked the campaign a lot. My issues were all technical based. That's all. But I have a lot of respect for the Obsidian guys, and I thought they did a great job with the story in that campaign.
Yeah. Well, it's fun to play it, right? So, like, we're enjoying it anyway.
Yeah.
So.
It's neat seeing it for the first time, because you almost imagine, like, in your head what where you would have gone with this. It's neat to see almost someone else's interpretation. It's pretty cool, actually.
Well, you guys, I mean, you've had a long-term relationship with those guys, right? I mean, it goes back to the beginning, really, doesn't it? To Baldur's Gate 1?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We published Interplay back at Black Isle Studios. There was our publisher back on.
Black Isle didn't even exist back then, I think.
Right.
Yeah, Black Isle didn't exist till Torment, I think.
It's pretty much
BG1. Was it BG? Are you pretty sure BG was it?
BG1, I think. Yeah.
Okay, maybe Dream.
No? Was it
BG2?
BG2. Oh, okay. Scott knows, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, we know those guys. We chat with them for a fair amount. They're good.
Yeah, we have a lot of respect for them.
Yeah. How about you guys haven't mentioned Viva Pinata yet?
That's you fishing.
I have a copy, but I haven't played it yet.
It's so good.
I had some helpers. It actually is, hats off to the Rare guys. I mean, it's actually just a beautiful, beautiful game. Like, it's very, it's so engaging. And no, I mean,
Me and my helpers were playing it all weekend, and I'm still getting cries of, hey, it's time for Viva Pinata. Nope, that's not Saturday. Saturday yet? No, it's not Saturday. Maybe today's Saturday.
Did you guys get Wii's? Oh, yeah. Did you get Wii's up in Canada?
Oh, yeah.
Do y'all have them?
They only got them in French Canada. But don't.
No. I had this bizarre, very minorly, like, kind of not painful Wii achievement experience. You know, I kind of literally went to the local mall. It was kind of, I heard there was an EB there. I thought, I'll just go over and see what's going on. And it was like, you know, I wasn't there at 5 a.m. or anything. I just kind of stood in line for a couple hours and got one and was like, wow, that wasn't so bad, until I started talking to the guys in line. And, you know, one guy was number 94 out of, you know, standing 93 people got them, and all these other guys arrived. And it was just, you know, it was neat to get one, and I think it's pretty fun to play. Like, it actually does work. The whole concept behind it works, which is neat when you're finally sitting down with the games. And so I still have trouble pitching in the baseball game because my arm gets really sore. and the ball, it doesn't go any faster, so I'm trying to figure it. And there's a whole bunch of guys here at the office who have them, so they explain, no, it's all in the wrist.
Yeah, that's because you're not from the USA, man. In the USA, we know how to play baseball.
Oh.
I don't know why.
Are you going to take that?
I don't know why I'm saying that. I don't know.
Our players play baseball. They have it up here in Canada. In fact,
I'm just giving you shit.
Wait. Excuse me. Who was the MVP for the National League? Oh. I believe he was a Canadian.
Oh!
Well, at least he was
some curly jokes. American friends and Bioware as well. So, and a lot of American employees in Bioware Edmonton.
I hear the challenge, the Games for Windows versus, you know, Bioware baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, if you saw how athletic we were.
Hey, it's all in the wrist, right?
it's a bit sad here at this office.
We'll have a great Wii competition, though.
So it's as hard to get up there as it is here, huh?
Pretty scarce, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Ryan's thinking of going up there if he could get one.
Yeah.
Gears of War is pretty fun. I'm enjoying that on 360 now. It's an event product for sure. It's
Gears good. Of War was the big talk around here until Viva Pinata showed up.
That's right.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
So yeah. Totally derailed.
The little kitty pinata game displaced. Yeah.
That was really scary. I mean, like, no one expected that. You just kind of came out of left field.
You can, but it's just the donut of life, as they call it.
The what?
It's called the donut of life. They explain, well, because there's sort of a gruesome nature. There's a lot of, like all rare games, it's sort of like, it's got sort of like a kid sort of veneer on it, but there's like always a little gruesome aspect.
Yeah. It's kind of darksome. It's very true. You can't really... Yeah, I feel like you can't really, like, you know, be successful in this game without setting up some little pinata concentration camps, you know?
You can send some in, right?
Oh, yeah, there's all kinds of stuff. Yeah. And there's also, like, because the guys invade, sometimes you have to beat them up with your shovel, right? And, mm-hmm. and you break the line. It's like, that's kind of weird. And then also the eating them. I mean, these guys have to eat one of these other ones.
Yeah, that's a little disturbing.
Like, right,
like, And like, you know, that's the thing about the rare games. They may have some of them be targeted towards younger audiences. There's usually some kind of
deep social commentary.
There's usually some kind of things that are there which are different. And that the whole way, like, you get the message, like, this pinata is eating that. Like, what the heck is going on? And it's like, who's eating? What's going on here? And, you know, it's cutesy and all the rest, but, you know, yeah, it's not candy.
Yeah.
I'm going to try beating somebody open with a shovel later and see if candy comes out. I mean, like, what the...
Well, that, yeah.
I want to go home and play.
Well, thank you guys all for taking the time out to talk with us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, our pleasure.
And even though we spent the last 5 minutes talking about Viva Pinata, we are very excited for Dragon Age.
That wasn't on message, was it?
Yeah.
See, that's the problem. You get us off topic on games, we'll go on.
We just like games, pretty much. You name it. We like any kind of games that are good. So, you know, we do play almost everything that comes out just because... You can learn things from great competitors. And
that's
a lot of
that's what we're saying over here at this magazine, that I really do encourage everybody here always to play the console games because it's just like more knowledge, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Right, thanks you very much for joining in. Stay safe and warm up there in Edmonton.
Thanks.
And always run to the mall if you need to. The world's largest mall.
Yep. Yep. All right.
Okay. We will hopefully catch up with you again, and we look forward to covering the game some more.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks,
yeah.
guys.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And then, are we still recording?
We're still recording.
I don't know what to do now. Okay, well, they hung up.
You know, actually, they do have the world's largest...
They do have the world's largest mall up there.
I was so amazed. They had, like, an ice skating rink up there and, like, three miniature golf courses, a bowling alley, supermarket, and a gun and a shooting range. An actual, like, honest to God, like, gun range in there.
In the mall?
In the mall.
That doesn't sound very Canadian. That sounds very American.
Well, it was kind of cool.
We got guns in our mall.
It was so crazy. Like I was hanging out. I had some extra time to kill with Scott. So we actually went around the mall. He's like, you're going to the mall. We actually went to a gun range in the mall, and I shot zombies.
Wow.
Awesome. I lived zombies. The dream. Little zombie targets. But
oh, zombie targets.
I lived
okay,
the dream.
They don't have actual zombies.
If they had
up
real zombies
in
there,
Canada.
I would never leave.
That'd be a great tourist attraction.
Come
we have zombies.
Come for the curling, stay for the zombies.
Okay, well, we're about to sign off. Thank you if you hung in all this time on this extra long podcast. A couple last orders of business before we sign off. One would be we have a very thrilling podcast. A very thrilling.
It's true, though.
I don't know if the pod. This is a thrilling podcast, but we have a thrilling contest taking place on 1UP right now. We are giving away a Wii, and it is Wii giveaway. Right?
WeGiveaway.1UP.com.
WeGiveaway.1UP.com.
Sorry, Ryan, you did
and,
not qualify.
And Ryan Scott, you cannot enter because you're a Ziff Davis employee.
Uh-huh.
But everyone else, you can join. So if you were one of those unlucky folks who didn't get one, you may try your luck now at 1UP.com. And do we have Darren? You look like you wish to speak.
Just really quickly, because we didn't have time for a full any news this week.
Right.
But I just want to let you guys know, set your TiVos for next Monday. The Colbert Report is going to have Will Wright. So that's going to be an interesting interview.
That's a meeting of gods there.
It is.
Right there. You got to check that out, guys. So,
yeah.
Heavens will open up for that one.
It's hard to know who's going to win that battle of intellects, because those are two genius gods.
My head's going to hurt after that.
Yeah.
But I have lots of other great news, but I'll save it for next week.
Yeah, we'll be back next week. So, pardon the abbreviated nature of this week's, the abbreviated us part, but we had the extra part with
right,
Ray and Greg,
which wasn't so abbreviated.
Which wasn't. You know what? I have to just get some sleep.
Yeah,
I'm just tired.
You're tired.
Okay, but we'll be back with a regular old podcast with the whole gang next
The whole gang will be there.
Whole yeehaw, gang. Yeehaw.
We doggies.
All righty. We will see y'all next week.